You're listening to the Fairways People podcast, where we share inspiring stories, meaningful conversations, and the voices behind our charity. Each episode offers a closer look at the people and passion that drive us. Hosted by Fairways Managing Director, Gareth Webb.
Hello everyone, so welcome to another Fairways People podcast. So I'm Gareth Webb, the Managing Director of Fairways. And for our podcast today, we have the one and only Employee of the Year, Jonathan Loney. Welcome, John.
I should say Employee of the Year 2019.
Was it? Yeah, say, well, yeah. You still got it. Hello. welcome, John. Thanks for you coming in today. How are you?
Thank you. Yeah, very well. Thank you.
Cool. So, John, you're currently our Director of Operations for our Welsh services. But you've been with Fairways now for around 10 years, just over 10 years.
Yeah, just over, yeah.
And you've actually had quite a variety of roles, senior roles with Fairways, and you've had quite a remarkable career, I'd say, since joining. So let me just talk you through briefly, just to give people an insight of your career so far. So you originally joined as the head of residential.
Yeah, that's right.
Which was overseeing our children's homes and our support living services.
Correct.
And then from there, you sort of, the role changed slightly in, I think, fostering, then you was head of fostering, a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then again, I think a little bit in the future, then I think family services come under that. And then possibly sort of education was never a part of that portfolio. But at one point, I think you had probably all of the other operations, didn't you, underneath you?
Definitely, yeah. Either full-time or babysitting, for sure. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So you've had quite a wide range portfolio of services. And you was promoted to director of residential. And then, but more recently, you're now sort of, you've cut down your hours slightly.
Yeah.
And your focus now is you're the Director of Operations for our Welsh services, and you're also a trustee for the
charity.
That's
right, yeah.
Well, so, lots to unpick there. So some really great stuff. You've currently got 3 direct reports. You've got about 40 or 50 staff underneath you. You're also a qualified social worker.
Yeah.
And you are, I know, like I said, you've had a great career. We'll talk a little bit about your life before Fairways. But I know you're passionate about, the working and supporting young people in the care system. So let's start from the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. With all my guests, I'd like to just ask, tell me a little bit about your childhood and where you grew up.
Yeah. I was born in Surrey, but to 2 very proudly Scottish parents. And had a relatively unremarkable childhood, I suppose. I had 2 older brothers. Interestingly, I think, which I probably wouldn't have realised at the time where it would lead me, my dad was involved in a school for young people that had epilepsy and was head of care for that. And we lived really close to that, to the site where he worked. And actually, that was my first job after leaving school, whilst I did a little bit of work experience there. But yeah, really enjoyed school, really good group of friends that I'm still in touch with. But as I say, it's a relatively unremarkable childhood in one sense, but certainly the ethos and values that my parents had of that sort of Celtic background, and also my dad's job, I think very strongly ingrained
in me.
For sure. Yeah.
So your parents were Scottish?
Very much so.
So do you eat much Scottish food?
Were
you
big brought up fan on... of haggis? Yeah,
are
absolutely.
Oh,
yeah, right. There was never stuffing with a Sunday race. It was always haggis.
Was it? Okay.
Which they would tell us was stuffing.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it was actually. We were eating sheep brains and all sorts.
Lovely.
Yeah,
oh. Do you know what? I've had it once. I think is it Burns Night?
That's the one.
With whiskey and some haggis and the traditional.
I'm sure Mac would have been able to have recited the poem. I cannot.
No. Okay, so from Surrey originally.
Yeah.
Did you have that normal sort of academic? Did you go to college, university?
Yeah, my school had a sick form actually. So it was school that just 10 minutes up the road, went to sick form there and was due to go to university to study politics. I've no idea why I was going to study politics really. It was more just one of the A-levels that I seemed to do better at, but decided to have a year out prior to that. Went to Australia for a year, which having had 2 older brothers was kind of the making of me really. Never really done much on my own. Went out there with a view of kind of doing 6 months work and then travelling, but actually got a job in a care home for adults with disabilities in Sydney, just after it was in 2000, so just watched the Sydney Olympics on TV, like seeing all the opera house and the bridge and the fireworks and stuff. It just looked like a place, pretty good place to be for a bit in the sun. But it was that job, I think, that led to what came next in terms of my career, for sure. But the it certainly wasn't all working. It was a really good year of travel. And, yeah, being 18, 19 over in Australia was a good time.
Did you do the like that traditional backpacking type?
Absolutely, yeah. Went up the East Coast all the way from Sydney up to Cairns. And, yeah, did that for about 6 weeks. And that was an absolute highlight of that trip on my own as well.
Right.
So, yeah,
okay.
It was which, looking back on it, I can't quite believe I did that at 18, really. I think that was part of it as well. I said I was going to have a year out. My parents just wanted me out of the house as well. So I think my dad's contacts got me that job.
Okay.
But it's very much around. They didn't want me bumming around for a year.
Okay, so then you come back home.
Yep.
And then what? How did you get into social work? Or what?
So, yeah, it was during the time in Australia when I really enjoyed the care work, actually, working in that residential setting. So it was adults with learning difficulties, and that led quite naturally to me changing what I was going to study at university and came to Southampton to do social work studies at the University of Southampton in 2002. So I've been in Southampton since, or around Hampshire since then. It's very much the experience in Australia, kind of some of the bits I'd seen from my dad's work, which led me down the social care, social work route. And then, university was, as I'm sure a lot of people know, you go out on a couple of placements, social work students within Fairways. My first placement was in I can't remember the name of the team now, it's changed names so many times, but one of the child protection teams at Southampton City Council.
Oh, okay.
For 10 weeks, which was...
That was eye-opening.
Eye-opening is the word for sure. Yeah. And it wasn't quite as protected as placements are now. I think you had a caseload on day one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was, again, another real learning experience. Trying to balance that alongside the traditional student life as well was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. You mean going out partying?
That was it, yeah. So, a lot of my friends were just doing, I think they probably go in, do about 2-3 hours a week, and there's me almost doing a full-time job in placement. But I kept up.
good. And what was your other placement?
It was Motivate in Portsmouth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which I'm sure is very different to how it is now. They're still around, but it was really good working with lots of different groups around for young people at the time. Yeah,
cool. So you then obviously you qualified as a social worker.
Yeah.
And then what was your next steps then, sort of?
Through the experience I had with Southampton, I had a few contacts within that team, applied for a couple of jobs and started to work for Southampton in what was a long-term team for young people, that were in need or entering the care system.
Okay.
And that was, 2005 when I started doing that, and was there for a couple of years. Very interesting job with a big caseload, learnt a hell of a lot. I remember the first couple of weeks as a young family that were really at risk and having to be supported by the police, literally in the first month of being a qualified social worker, being supported by the police to try and place 4 young people into foster care that were from St Mary's, and most of the local neighbourhood came out to see what was going on. And that was it was very eye-opening would be the word, I think. But there's certainly some experiences that I still can't believe, really, looking back on it. So I was only 22, 23 at the time, but it was working in partnership with the police, trying to support young people and families as best we could. But it was challenging times, and got more challenging, really, whilst working for Southampton. It was around about that time that without wanting to get too political, I think austerity started to bite and there were funding cuts, and whilst the social work teams remained quite well staffed, we really started to see youth services be impacted, I think. And so when you'd have young people who would be in need of support, where you could refer them, I found was starting to dwindle a little bit. There were less options around groups, youth workers, things like that around about that time. This is sort of 2010 onwards. Became quite challenging.
You read a lot about sort of the cuts, and so I guess from your experience of working for the local authority, you read a lot and you see on the news, social workers are under pressure, their workload, their caseload, not necessarily all the resources. Did it feel like that did you feel that pressure in the local authority?
Yeah, it did, definitely. I think caseloads were high. As I say, I think that the kind of referral routes became more challenging. And but at the time, what I would say as well, though, there were more placement options, I think, as well. It felt like, there was a lot of good work being done. And I was with Southampton City Council for 10 years in the end. I worked 6-7 years in the children in care team, as it was then in Southampton, that kind of ran all the way, young people all the way through to 21 or beyond if they're at university. Some of the outcomes for young people really, really good, and some great times. Some amazing young people that I work with. Some of the stories, I mean, yeah. I wouldn't really want to go into some of them, to be honest here, but it's like, you know, it was really real challenges, but extremely rewarding work. Yeah. And some young people who had experienced the most extreme forms of rejection, exploitation, abuse, and that would come out as a social worker sometimes, to say, because a lot of the other services had gone, so you would be kind of that one stable person sometimes for some of these young people. So one day you'd they'd really be relying on you, and the next day it could be really, really challenging. And then as I said, I don't want to go into too much detail on that, but yeah, so and then the next day again you'd be looking to repair that relationship and never giving up, really, which is a really important value that we take forward in Fairways as well.
Okay, so you said you were a local authority for about 10 years, and then was Fairways, was that the next step?
So how did that come about? I did a couple of, my last year or two at Southampton was, I kind of took that step into management that I always said I would never take, and was a deputy or assistant manager in the children in care team that I was working in. It was focusing predominantly on young people leaving care and care leavers. And I'd had some experience with Fairways, a really positive experience, worked with Manor Farm for a young person that I was working with, and with fostering as well, always very positive experiences. And Dan Buckle, formerly of this parish, had moved on from that team and onwards, and Matt as well, still here. And it an opportunity came about for, as you said in your introduction, around the head of residential role, which incorporated children's homes and supported living. And if I'm honest, at the time, it was the, as it was then, post-16 service that really interested me, because it felt as though it could really, really make a difference. The limited experience I'd had of working with Fairways is these workers could really, really make a difference. It felt very different to having a caseload of 20, 30 young people by yourself. It just felt like the right move at the time. And I think the passion that I had, or do have, around young people leaving care, the supported living part was a bit that interested me the most, which is interesting in one way, because it's actually been children's homes has been the one constant at my time in Fairways. For different reasons. Just felt the right opportunity at the right time. It'd been 10 years in the local authority. Genuinely loved it. Some really lots of social workers will get a bad press, but I promise you there are really good social workers there then and now. But it was the right time for me to move on, for sure.
It's a tough job, and you've got to manage a lot of risk, a lot of challenges, you know, and you have to make decisions at times with the best resources you've got around you, and it's a challenging role,
definitely. So, and sometimes as well, a lot of bureaucracy as well, which can be challenging. You know, a young person needs this type of placement, but it can sometimes, when you've worked with that young person a long time, it can sometimes be a challenge to get exactly what they need in that setting.
Okay, so you joined around 10 and a half years ago, head of residential. You've had a number of different sort of portfolios, should I say. What was your residential, fostering, family services?
Which was your favourite? Well,
I was actually going to say, what was the most challenging service would you say?
I think that when I look back at the 10 and a bit years at Fairways, I am extremely proud of, whilst I wasn't involved in the inspection in any way, but to see Manor Farm with an outstanding, we had real challenges for a number of years at Manor Farm, and I know there are some staff that have been there for a really, really long period of time there. It was very for whatever reason, it just seemed like for a good 1, 2, 3 years, it felt like we went from one challenging situation to another. So to see how it is right now is just really gratifying, and fair play to everybody involved in that.
Yeah, you've really witnessed that journey, haven't you? And worked alongside that as well.
Definitely. Yeah, got a lot of time for having the tea.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about your role now then. So you're currently, your services that you oversee. So you're currently the Director of Operations for our Welsh services and the trustee. So you've got crisis intervention homes. You've got a more of a longer term residential children's home and an outdoor adventure. So what's crisis intervention then? What, use that word.
Yeah, we're trying to move away from using the word crisis because young people will see that they've been labelled as a crisis young person, I suppose. But I think that is how it is known within Fairways, and there's no issue with that because we traditionally use that word. But it's so young people go to these homes for normally a period of 12 weeks. It's very much a bit of a circuit breaker, really. They may have been experiencing exploitation of any kind. And the right thing is for them to be moving for a period of time away from their locality. The homes are very much in the middle of nowhere. Anyone that's been won't need that explaining in any more detail, but it's like you turn off the M4 and then another road and you are into lots of expanse. It's many, many miles from anywhere in many ways. I think it gives the environment gives a feeling of containment as well. And for these young people and for so many young people that have been through that, it's exactly been what they have needed around a proper break and some really intensive work around whatever has been going on for them from where they've come from, alongside a structured activity program that very much links into the environment that is in South Wales around lots of outdoor activity, lots of outdoor education, outdoor activities available.
So we've got an outdoor adventure centre that supports the crisis centres.
Yeah.
Sorry, the intervention homes. And then more recently you've opened up like a longer term home. So how did that come about?
So many young people have been through the services at T Ross and Birch Grove. Birch Grove opened in 2020, right in the middle of COVID, like the beginnings of COVID. So I remember it very well, exactly when it was. And for these young people, Birch Grove was initially going to be a long-term home, but it just the setting of that feeling of being in the middle of nowhere, young people felt a feeling of relief, stated they want to stay long-term. But the move to Birch Grove, which is literally next door, I think it just felt as though there wasn't progress and it was almost too remote to have been a long-term home. So that became what we now call an intervention home. But what we found for a lot of those young people that were going through T Ross and Birch Grove, they had done all they could in those 12 weeks. They'd engaged, the relationships built with staff, amazing, real positive engagement with activities, with everything that we're trying to do for them, the reflection on their previous experiences. It would get towards the end of placement and we were having to extend and extend and extend so many placements of young people that literally could have done no more on the back of really what's gone on for them previously, the trauma they've experienced. So their referral is reading, people are not wanting to take a chance on that given past risks. But these young people felt safe, contained, happy with the staff team in Wales, were saying to us they wanted to remain long term. And it was for that reason, really, a couple of years ago, it feels like quite a long time ago, we started talking about it. It's been quite a long process, even though it only opened in April. We were really pushing and hoping to give long term residential children's homes a go in Wales again, and hence the opening of Tea Cribbin in April. Three young people placed, all of whom have been through those intervention homes in one way or another. Two came directly from there. Another had been with us a year ago, moved on, probably wouldn't have moved on if that home was open, to be fair, potentially. But when a placement that young person was in broke down, she was very clear that the only place that she felt safe and felt as close to home as possible was when she was within our services in Wales, and got wind of that and a placement was offered. So I think that says a lot.
Yeah, definitely. No, brilliant.
So that's, that makes sense.
So it's like a step down home, isn't it, for the young people, which is great to keep that consistency of care and staff relationships. So in terms of the interventions homes, the crisis centres, do you get a lot of referrals? Is it?
We do get a lot of referrals. Yeah. And part of that, I think, is based on reputation. I think a lot of good work has been done by the teams. I said earlier about how much time I've got for Pav and the team. I should say I've got time for every single team and manager within Fairways. But the work the guys do in Wales is a sense of great, great pride. And I think the reputation of those homes is really gaining traction, both with councils, local authorities that we've used traditionally, but also lots of new local authorities. So there's quite a few Welsh local authorities that have had young people placed in the homes over the last year or two for the first time, and now they're referring into us in greater numbers as well, because what they see is, yeah, it might be a more intensive placement to begin with, but actually the longer term good that is doing, it's worth that extra investment.
Okay, so they can come from anywhere in the country, could they?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, we've had recent placements from young people in Liverpool, still a number of young people from Hampshire, and also, more and more Welsh local authorities. We've recently had our first ever young person placed from Powys, which is great because the homes are in the county of Powys.
Yeah, brilliant. Cool, okay. So what's your why, John? What makes you get out of bed in the morning and do this job?
Good question. I think that my why is probably different to what it was when I first started in social care. I think that was you kind of fall into careers, but I think because of how I had seen the need for young people that had a rough start in life, the need for them to be supported and the amazing work they could do kind of from a very, very young age because of what my dad did, and where our home was based. As I say, it's really close to the site. I think, there's part of me that there is an element of ingrained around the inequalities in society and unfairness within that. And I think everyone deserves a fair chance. And what I've seen in my years working at Southampton and here is the difference that can be made. And working directly with young people, I absolutely love that opportunity. But also now, for me, the reason I want to do what I do is to give young people the best opportunity, but ensuring that is done. What my role now is ensuring that we are giving the staff and young people the tools and resources to do that. Yeah. And I feel like when I think specifically about my role overseeing Wales, I feel like the 10 years that I've been within Fairways and been involved with those services, I can really support the staff members to continue the great work that's been done up there.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, so we also speak about our 5-year strategy and our 5-year breakthrough objectives, but what's some of the key objectives you hope to achieve for sort of your Welsh services? And
yeah, I think it's always growth is always a challenge. So opening a new home within the last few months is always going to bring on different bits you haven't thought about. And certainly, opening that service, which I won't go into detail about, but it took longer than planned. And there's always learning from that. But the main thing for me short term is to ensure that as we grow with the new home and any future homes, we do not let our standards drop, and the care and support and the outcomes we're offering for young people remain as high as they have been when we were a lot smaller, as just two children's homes in Wales, and ensuring that as Wales grows, it doesn't lose its real genuine part of the wider Fairways community, I think. I've been it's been really great to see over the years that some people may know, some may not, that there's only one or two staff have been with Fairways in Wales more than 5 years now. But actually, I feel like the homes in Wales feel more part of Fairways than they have ever
been. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think continuing that as we grow is absolute number one. for me. Okay. Support, if we can, to support as many young people as possible and develop different pathways within Wales as we started to do. Yeah. As well. And I'm very involved in the strategic objective around how we track, monitor outcomes. And very much for me, that's about making sure young people have the best possible plans possible to allow them to achieve, and to ensure we can give staff the right tools as well.
Absolutely. No, definitely. Absolutely agree with that. And you just touched on it there. You also support a number of other key strategic objectives, but one of them that you're taking the lead on is the outcome measures for young people, and how we really develop a tool to ensure that we that young people make accept good progress whilst with us and into the future. So, excuse me, you recently looking at a model called CANS.
Yeah, that's right.
Talk to me a little bit about what that is.
So the CANS is, I know some staff would have potentially worked with the Outcome Star, heard of other systems around that, and really CANS is similar in some ways to that, but actually what it can do much better is, so there is an online portal. We will be looking at young people's needs, risks, but fundamentally what it does more than others is really looking at young people's strengths and ensuring that our planning is strengths-based. And we are in the early phases of that. All Seasons and T-Cribbin are part of the pilot regarding that, but we would look to roll that out. And one of the strengths as well is we're relatively early adopters of that. Sorry, I'm just kicking equipment below me. Sorry. Everyone's got a fright.
Right. Smash up the studio. Yeah. The broom cupboard, as I like to call it.
Yeah. Where was I? CANS. Yeah. Okay. So we're early adopters, and we will be able to work with the professionals involved with CANS to develop that as best for Fairways. And what is a real strength will be, as we roll out as one Fairways, ensuring that any young people that move from, for example, Children's Homes in Wales down to All Seasons, which did actually happen for a young person recently, or in the future, as it's adopted by more and more services, from Children's Homes to supported living and fostering, that assessment will be able to go with them, and we can better monitor and show progress and outcomes, because we absolutely, the work that goes on is amazing. I truly believe in the outcomes that staff are achieving for young people and young people are achieving for themselves, but how we track and monitor that between services, this will help develop that.
Definitely, yeah. And it's quite exciting, because this is CANS. I think it stands for Child and Adolescent Needs Assessment.
Probably should have started with that, yeah. Actually. Yeah,
but it's a national, I hope it's going to be rolled out nationally, so we're
That's
part
right,
of that
yeah.
pilot, which
absolutely.
Is quite exciting.
In the early stages, definitely.
Cool, okay. So we talk a lot about our values in Fairways and playing your part. But what's your core values? I keep saying this, I don't know why, but I have to keep saying it now. So if you used to stick a rock at the seaside and you used to be able to snap them in half and it'd be running through. I used to go to the Isle of Wight as a child, I don't know whether it, but
Yeah.
Isle of Wight. What would be your core values that run through you? So if I was to, I'm not going to snap you in half, John.
you could.
But what's the values that are core inside you that you live and breathe every day?
Yeah, fairness first, yeah. And foremost, yeah, absolutely. It's not value specific, but I will absolutely listen to people when they do not feel as though, as leaders, we're demonstrating fairness. I think that's really, really absolutely key. Leadership, really, transparency, and yeah, I think they're the key ones. Actually, for me,
yeah.
I think fairness is
definitely
that's yeah. it. That would be the one word in that sticker rock, really.
Yeah, no, I definitely relate to that, especially working with you for so many years. You're all about fairness and listening to people and communicating effectively and ensuring that people feel valued. So, yeah, I would agree with that definitely. Okay, last question.
Yeah,
I always ask a generic question to all my guests. So what I'd like to ask is, look, with all the complexities and the chaos of everyday life, and we know it can impact on our own mental health and well-being. So my question to you is, what do you do for your own well-being, or what do you recommend?
Yeah, I think something that I probably haven't always practiced, but I'm certainly getting there with it. I think it's really important to switch off and give yourself time, whether that's with family, whatever. Activities. I'm trying to play more golf actually, but it's difficult between different conflicting bits and bobs, but it, you know, and I wouldn't particularly recommend golf, but I think it's important to have time for yourself away and, you know, in the fresh air. I think that's that's certainly something for me that I've started to try and do more regularly. Not very good at it, very frustrating, but yeah, that's the thing. I think I used to enjoy more active pursuits, but as I get into my 40s, it's becoming more challenging. But I just think it's really, I think switching off, having that boundary of work and home. Really early on in my days at Southampton City Council, I've probably heard it a million times, but it's the first time I'd heard it, someone's retirement due. This independent reviewing officer, in a little speech she gave after coffee and cake or whatever, said, I'll get it the wrong way round now. You should work to live, don't live to work.
Yes.
I think that's really, really important. I think sometimes we lose sight of that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll have to listen back to make sure I got that the right way around.
Yeah,
I got it the wrong way around. It's not good.
No, I get you. I get it. Yeah, and you're right. Switching off is key, and it's especially the work we do.
Definitely.
You know, do you know what? It was last November, so nearly getting on for a year ago. I made a conscious decision, sort of when I come back from holiday, that I won't put my emails back on my phone.
Yeah.
And I've stuck to it. And I think, actually, when you think about it, because we're constantly on your technology, on your phone all the time, you check them at night, but actually, you've got to have that, you've got to be able to switch off.
Absolutely.
And actually, emails can wait.
Definitely.
Now, you are expected to be out of the office for a few hours, but we've got into such a habit where it's like respond straight away, isn't it? And so I've stuck to that habit, which I'm quite proud of. But yeah, you're right, it's so important that we switch off, especially the work we do. So
yeah. One thing I would say as well, though, and it links to the outdoors, actually, and Wales and the work they do, and outdoor adventures. Recently, we went on a summer holiday with my wife and two kids, who are 6 and 8, and we, our sister, and organised different bits and bobs, and outdoor adventures took me and my family out gorge walking.
Brilliant.
It was just an amazing experience, and I think, yeah, anyone that wants to see more about what the Wales teams do and stuff, I'm, you know, the outdoor adventures guys, what are you doing offering out free gorge walking? But I just, it was, and it was like, yeah, what an experience, and like the adrenaline rush and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think, yeah, yeah, great way to blow away the cobwebs. So
definitely, yeah. No, it's amazing. The Brecon Beacons, especially where we're located, but the activities they do, it's lovely. Yeah, cool.
Definitely.
Okay, well, John, we've come to the end.
It's great as well. You've finally taken it on the road. You came and met me in Wales.
Yes.
I think if people really listening, they can hear the sound of the Welsh choir off the mountains. So thank you very much.
Thanks for your time today, John. And thank you all for listening. Hello, everyone. So with that, I am delighted to bring season one of the Fairways People podcast to a close. We've had a really inspiring start to our podcast journey, speaking to Fairway senior leadership team and learning all about them, their why, their journey, and how they come to Fairways. Hopefully it's added a little bit of personality behind their names and faces. To be fair, I found it really interesting, and it amazes me the amount of service, the length of service between all of my guests, which really shows how special Fairways is. So now, we're going to be taking a short break as we prepare for our annual staff conference. We will be back in a few weeks for an even more exciting season two of the Fairways People podcast. Remember, if there's anything or anyone you would like to hear on the podcast, let me know and we'll see what I can do. Make sure you follow us. Keep an eye out for season two dropping soon. Thank you for listening, and we will see you soon.